And we're back out here at the Dry and Rhymeball Garages. Donald Davidson, Talk of Gasoline Alley, 613. Let's get right to your phone calls. Ted, you're up first with Donald.
Hello, Ted.
Hello, Donald.
Yes, sir.
Donald, could you profile the 29 winner, Ray Keach?
Yes, I could.
Thank you.
He had a very short Indianapolis career, just 2 years, 28 and 29. And he held at one time, but not at the time that he won the 500. He had held the world land speed record, and that's what really put him on the map. He was a dirt track driver from Pennsylvania. I think Coatesville, Pennsylvania is where he was from. And he sort of lapped into prominence because he'd been racing dirt tracks, but was not known at all. And he lapped into prominence because he was selected by J.M. White with an enormous land speed record car called the White Triplex something. Anyway, it had three Aero Liberty V12 engines. Three.
Wow.
So it just weighed a ton, and it was like six wheels, and it was just a monster. And so he got the driving assignment, and he did 207 miles an hour in 1928 in the spring. And that's what they took the record away from. I think it was held by Henry Seagrave at that time. There was two Brits, Captain Malcolm, later Sir Malcolm Campbell, with the Bluebird, and then there was Henry Seagrave with the Sunbeam. They were back and forth several times. So there was a lot of great activity on the sands of Daytona Beach. And so there was two different approaches, and one was the J.M. White approach with the three Aero Liberty engines, and whatever that thing weighed, it was several tons. And then Frank Lockhart, who had already won the 500, went the other way with the lightest thing that he could get, which was a car that was built in the Stutz building. That's
right down
the Stutz building that's still there to this day. So anyway, Keach broke the record and raised it to 207 miles an hour, and that's what Lockhart was trying to beat. I think it would be correct to say that Keach held the world land speed record when he drove in the 500 for the first time, but that came about in a very unusual way, and this is real trivia. The 2 years that he drove, it was the Simplex Piston Ring Special, and it was owned by M.A. Yeagle. Well, the M stood for Maud. It was a lady.
Oh, wow.
And her husband was a sportsman, but, I mean, it wasn't a tax thing. She was the real race buff. And so not only did Ray Keach win the 500 in 1929, driving for a lady, which was the first time, it actually had belonged to a lady because it was a Frank Lockhart car.
Oh, my.
And when Frank Lockhart was fatally injured at Daytona on April 22nd of 1928, Frank Lockhart had already entered two cars for the 500. He won it in 26, and he was on the pole in 27, broke down, but he had entered two cars for the 28 race. And so the entries, one was run by a Lockhart relative, and that's the one that Tony Gallotta drove, and then the other one was sold by Lockhart's widow to Maud Yeagle. So it was actually a case of an Indianapolis car being sold by a woman to a woman in 1928.
Wow.
But anyway, so Ray Keach, as far as the 500 was concerned, was fourth in 1928 with Wilbur Shaw as a relief driver. And Wilbur Shaw had also been down to Daytona Beach. And then in 1929, then Keach won the race. Louis Meyer probably could have had an excellent chance to win it 2 years in a row, but he had a... Oh, we've run over here, haven't we? We have to go to the Stever and we'll do make Ray Keach a two-part. I thought, okay. God, the guy drove in the 500 twice. We still can't get him in one segment.
We'll be right back and finish with Ray Keach in a matter of moments. Let's check in with Steve Simpson.
I feel like such an...
6:23, talking Gasoline Alley. Donald, we were a year to go on Ray Keach.
Ray Keach. After the 1928 500, in which he finished fourth with Wilbur Shaw as a relief, he went on and was very successful in the championship season and was second behind Louis Meyer. So in 1929, he carried number two because that's the number that he earned. He won the 500. and so would appear that he would be able to win the national championship. And in the very next race at Altoona, Pennsylvania, board track, he was involved in a multiple car accident, and he was fatally injured June the 15th of 1929. So it's rather a sad and bizarre footnote in history, but that's the way things were in those days. The defending Indianapolis 500 winner enjoyed it for 2 weeks, and then I think he ended up second in the championship posthumously. But anyway, it would be nice. It was, but for I think it was either Henry Seagrave, probably Seagrave, that reclaimed the world land speed record. It would be neat to say that the defending Indianapolis 500, or the current Indianapolis 500 winner and the holder of the land speed record, was the same guy. Well, it unfortunately he'd lost it by that time. But anyway, he was one of the grandstands at Daytona is named for him. But wow. He's pretty much, you know, lost in history. And I found this a long time ago, when less and less people now have memorized all of the 500 winners. But the time when I was first around, I mean, all kinds of people would come and say, I memorized all the 500 winners.
Yeah.
So I would spot check them. And usually 1929 was the stumper, one of the stumpers.
Oh, right, my.
Peach. Yeah.
Very nice. All right, let's continue. We've got a couple minutes here. We can talk to John. You're up on with Donald, John.
Hey, Donald. Hi, Dave. How are you doing?
Fine, John.
I have a trivia question for you, and this will show me just how much you pay attention to your surroundings at the track.
Now, I know. I won't do very well on this.
It has to do with the yard of bricks.
Okay.
We all know that's 1 yard.
Yeah.
If you look closely between where the asphalt ends and the asphalt begins, how many rows of bricks are there?
Nine.
Hey, you got it.
Next question, please.
Yeah.
No, I just happen to know that one. I thought you had me there, but no, I know it's nine.
Yeah.
And it's six. In fact, the number just changed. It was it 562 and a half or 652 and a half? I know there's a half because it ends up with a half in each row.
Yeah.
And since it's an odd number, you'll end up with a half a brick. But I think that when the last time they redid it, I think the number changed slightly. But I think it still ends in a half.
Very nice. John, thanks for your call. We got about a minute left here. We'll try to talk to Ralph. You're up with Donald, Ralph.
Hey, guys. Enjoy your show very much.
Thank you.
I want to be careful with this question. I don't want it to be disrespectful. But my question is, who are the most ill-prepared drivers to ever run in the 500. I don't mean the worst or anything like that, but like I think of Salt Walther and the guy that Patrick Bernard
yeah.
Didn't seem to have the qualifications or the resume. And I just thought you might comment on some of the folks that ran that probably shouldn't have been running.
Well, it depends on what era you're talking about. There's a Cannonball Baker, E.G. Cannonball Baker, drove in the 1922 500. He was a great motorcyclist, or it was a motorcyclist, but his forte, if you like, was the coast-to-coast record runs. But as far as running in the 22 500 and finishing 11th when it was very much of an enduro, I'm not too sure that wasn't the only automobile race in which he ever drove. Anyway, I'd have to think about that, and that's kind of a tough question because there's some people that have come in that have been very short on experience. And I will say that Salt Walther and Patrick Bedard, they ended up qualifying for the race, including Bedard twice. So they still got out there and did it. But I think I understand the intent of the question, and we're going to take a break here,
yep,
so
we'll
I've got time to think about it.
We'll come right back with Donald and Talk of Gasoline Alley live from the Dry and Rhinebeau Garage. Back on WIBC 634, the Talk of Gasoline Alley. Donald?
The one other driver, with reference to the gentleman's question about, I think what he meant was the drivers with the least experience that ever drove in the 500. There was a driver named Roland Free. And he's one of the two drivers that has that extraordinary pattern where they had two starts, 1930 and 1947. But Roland Free was a motorcycle racer and did land speed record attempts with motorcycles. In fact, that's probably what he was best known for. And how the drives at Indianapolis came about, I have no idea. But I've talked to several people about this, including people that knew him. And we're not aware that he ever drove a race anywhere. It could be that the only two automobile races he ever competed in were the Indianapolis 500. Well, you can't do that anymore, but you could then when it was very much of enduro. Because, and again, back on Cannonball Baker, I mean, a lot of people think, well, Cannonball Baker must have been like Bernie Oldfield or Ralph DePalma or somebody like that. But I think that the 22-500, I've never seen anything that would show him running in dirt tracks or anything, but you know, it's a rough brick track, and all you know, you didn't have to worry about bumping and all this kind of stuff, because they in those days they would have less than 33. They had 27 that year, and all you had to be, or not all you had to be, but if as long as you were big and brawny as he was, he had huge hands, massive man. And it's an all-brick track, so it's an enduro.
Right.
And so if you just sit out there and other cars crash or break down, you just keep running, you know. So, but anyway, can't do that anymore.
Let's try to get another call in here with Bill. You're up with Donald Davidson. Bill.
Hi, Donald. I'm a first-time caller from San Francisco. Very honored to be on your show tonight.
Well, thank you.
I have sat in the Southwest Vista grandstand for 30 years, and sometimes my mind begins to wander during the race. Cars are just kind of roaring by like they're on rails, and I wonder, what did Paul Russo in a Novi, or Parnelli in a Roadster, or even Jimmy Clark in a Lotus look like from the seats? So my question is, would you talk about how those guys would drive the first turn and into the short chute in those days?
Well, it would be very different starts for the three that you mentioned, because Paul Russo is driving a front-engine Novi, which was like a truck, and Jim Clark was very, very precise with a rear-engine Lotus and lying on his back and being very, very precise. And who was it? Oh, Parnelli.
Parnelli.
All right, well, it depends on whether you're talking front-engine or rear-engine, because when he was running front-engine, he had a style that bordered on dirt tracking, because what he would do was to deliberately put it into a bit of a slide, dirt track it, and then punch the throttle so that the tire would stand up, which was his secret. It would project him forth a little bit, and he could pick up like a tenth of a second a turn, which doesn't sound like much, but it adds up. And that's how he did the first 150. He said that in 1961, during the race, he actually went into a slide by mistake, or a non-deliberate slide,
right,
and heading for the wall, and he twisted the wheel and hit the throttle, and he felt something that he thought, I think I just projected forward. So when he got on the tire test program that summer, he experimented with it, and it was doing it deliberately. Now, not everybody could go into a deliberate slide and save it, but and then he would come in, and he wouldn't tell anybody what he was doing. Sometimes he would do it, sometimes he wouldn't. He'd remember when and when he didn't do it, and then he would come in, and then they would give him the card with the latest times on, and he'd check, and he knew which, he could see that it was working.
Wow.
And so that was his secret to going out and doing the 150. And he was living with Jim Hurtubise at the time. They shared a house together with their wives. And Hurtubise, he never did tell Hurtubise what he was doing. And then finally somebody figured it out. And then, then they all tried to do it, by which time the tires were getting wider and you couldn't, the tires wouldn't tuck under anymore. And then they went to the wide tires and the rear engine cars, where you couldn't employ tactics like that. So the answer is, they would have had three distinctly different styles.
Where would a Roadster have to shut down on the main straightaway to make the turns in those days?
Quite a way up, because what they would do is, if they were averaging 150 miles an hour, they would go up to 175 on the straightaways. They would tap the brake and lift, and then put it into a slide. Some of them, if you were Troy Ruttman, you'd come through there at about a 3/4 angle. And then probably, I don't even know what the speeds would be through the turns, but there was quite a difference in speed between going through the turns and down the straightaways. And then, again, when the rear engine cars came in and the tires got wider, the interval between the lift and getting back on the throttle got less and less until they could practically flat-foot it.
Uh-huh. Bill, thanks for your call. We appreciate it. It is 6:39. We'll pause. We'll come right back here. Tom, you'll be up next on the Talk of Gasoline Alley with Donald Davidson. And at 6:43, we're back with the Talk of Gasoline Alley. Don't forget the Network Indiana show, streaming at WIBC.com, beginning at 7 o'clock tonight, the second hour of the Talk of Gasoline Alley. And I believe Tom is up next. Is that correct? Tom, you're up with Donald.
Hi, guys. How you doing tonight?
Fine, Tom.
The question I've got is about Davey Hamilton's number, 02. When was the last time that a car was in the race that started with zero, and for that matter, entries with started with zero like that on the number?
It's never happened before. This is the first time. It was always numbers 1 through 99. They never had a three-digit number, never had anything beginning with zero until this year. So that's a first. Okay.
Interesting. Tom, thank you very much for your phone call. Robert, you're up with Donald.
Hey, guys. How you doing tonight?
Fine, sir.
Hey, Donald, I got a question for you. Here we go. I'm going to give this a shot. I was talking with a friend of mine, and we were trying to figure this out. How many winning cars does the Speedway Museum have?
Okay.
And then the second part is, for the ones that we don't know about, are there some that we do know where they're at? I mean, how many are accounted for out of the 91 races that have been held?
91? Well, we've only had 90, so it's not
or
nearly
90,
as much as
right.
we were
okay,
thinking.
Well,
yeah. All right.
Okay, so 90.
Okay, the Marmon Wasp, 1911 winners in the museum, 12 winners in the museum, 13 we don't know, 14's in the museum, 15 we don't know, 16 is supposedly in California, but that's up for discussion as to whether it is the 16 winner or not. 19 we don't know, 20, 21, 22 winners in the museum, 23 we don't know, 24, 25, 26, 27 we don't know, 28 is in the museum with other parts, 29 we don't know, 30 we don't know, 31 is in a private collection, 32 is in the museum, 33 some guy supposedly has, but I'd like to see it first. There's a claimant on the 34, we got to have suspicions, we think it's a team car, 35 gone. 36, a claimant, disputed. 37, gone. 38, gone. 39, 40 winners in the museum. 41 is in the museum. 46 in the museum. 47, 48 winners in the museum. 49 winner is in a private collection in Michigan. 50 is in the museum. 51, 52 is in the Peterson Museum. It's owned by a guy named Bruce Meyer. 53, 54 winners in the museum. 55 winner is currently in Tulsa, Oklahoma, but is actually, it belongs to the IMS Foundation. 56 winner was restored. It's at the track, but it's going back to Tulsa, Oklahoma. 57, 58 winners in the museum. 59 winners in the private collections. I think Buzz Calkins' father owns that now, although that's got a lot of new stuff on it. The 60 winner is in the museum, with not all the original stuff. 61, yes, museum. 62, yes. 63, yes. 64, yes. 65, I think, is Ford Motor Company. 66 is in a private collection, disputed. 67, museum. 68, museum. 69, Smithsonian, replica in a museum. 70 and 71, Parnelli has one of those, and I forget where the other one is. 72, authenticated, Speedway Museum. 73, Lee Brayton, Scott's dad, has a replica in the museum. 74 winners in a private collection. 75 is in a private collection. 76 was owned by Cliff Husel at one time, and that's in a private collection. 77 winner, museum. 78 museum. 79 Penske has it. 80s in the museum. 81 a fellow named Tom Malloy has. 82 winner, museum. 83 museum. 84 Penske. 85 Penske. 86 is a True Sports, and I think probably Ray Hall still has that. It was on display in the museum, but it's now it's not there, so I think he still has it. 87 is in the Penske collection. 88 is in the Penske collection. This is easy because Penske wins it for every year from here on.
Uh-huh.
Then we get to 89 was a Patrick car, and I don't know where the 89 winner is, Fittipaldi. 90's in the museum. 91's Penske. 92... winner, I don't know where that is. That was the Gallus. The Galmer. I'm not sure where that is. 93 Penske would have. 94 Penske would have. 95's in the museum. 96, Hemelgarn, I think, still has. 97, the Treadway winner, don't know. Maybe Treadway has that. I'm not sure where that one is.
Fred does
98's in the museum. 99's in the museum on loan for Foyt. And then now we're recent with 2000 is Ganassi, probably still has that. 01, 02, 03, Penske. 04 is Ray Hall Letterman, they probably still have it. 05 is Andretti Green. They probably still have it, and the 96 Penske has. So how's that? That only took, what,
unbelievable,
8 minutes and 32 seconds?
That's pretty cool.
Donald, you're the greatest. Thank you so much.
Thank
you're
you.
My hero. Thank you.
All right.
You.
I hope you were writing all that down, because I ain't doing it again.
I'm gonna go back and get it off the streaming audio. So
okay.
Write it down. So
all right. Thanks.
All right. Thank you, sir. It is 6:49. Let's head out and take a look at Steve. Back on WIBC, the Talk of Gasoline Alley. The Network Indiana call-in number is 1-800-603-6453. That's 800-603-MIKE. Let's get back to your phone calls with Donald, and Bill will be up next. Bill? Hello, Bill.
Yes, Donald. How are you?
Fine, sir. How are you?
I'd like to ask a question, not about the drivers, but about the man named Donald Davidson. He came over as a high school kid, I believe, the first year, didn't you?
No, thank you, but no, I was a little older than that, but I'm not telling you how much. I was out of school.
You were out of school?
Yeah.
Well, at that time, you went to a race party downtown, the old automotive race parties.
Automotive boosters at the Murat Temple with Roger Foster.
Uh-huh.
Yes?
Well, I was Roger's partner.
Really?
To give you an idea who I am.
Okay.
I was president that year and introduced you, and Sam Hanks, and he reintroduced you. And I just, some of them might be interested in the difference in what you see in the days against what it was in those days.
You mean with the participants?
The parties. Drivers, in particular, I remember one you called Freddie Agavation.
Okay, well,
you gave Freddie his rundown.
I did.
And said, I'd forgotten half of that.
Well, actually, I had rehearsed that because we did it on the PA on the second qualifying day which was a few days before that. But I think I went to like maybe three or four of those. And the first year, I remember that Duke Nalen was there, Pat Vidan, I think Bobby Unser was there the first year, and.
We usually had at least 30 of them.
Well, I don't know if it was that many, but there was quite a few at a table. I remember in 1965, Mario Andretti was there. He hadn't driven in the race yet.
Yeah.
And I met Deanne, his wife. In fact, I think that's the only time I ever spoke with her was at that party.
Wow.
In 1965. I've been meaning to, you know, I've seen her in the meantime from a distance, but I've never actually spoken to her. Well, 42 years now, one of these days. But no, those were great because all you had to do was just invite the drivers to come down and they would go. And nobody was paid, to the best of my knowledge. I know I wasn't.
Yeah.
And you just invite them. If I didn't mention, did I mention Pat Vidan?
Yes.
I think he, okay.
Yes.
Probably think of a few others, but no, those were, there used to be a lot of those kind of functions and you don't have those anymore.
No.
But thank you for the memories. I remember them very well.
Bill, thank you ever so much. We appreciate that. And again, Donald, great job as always.
Thank you, Dave.
The Network Indiana Show, again, streaming. You can listen to it here on WIBC.com. Go to WIBC.com. There's plenty of blogs and archived interviews there. So with one ear, you can listen to Donald and streaming on WIBC.com and listen to Stever with live from the News Center with the other. Again, that phone number to call in, 1-800-603-6453. 1-800-603-6453. We'll be back again tomorrow night out here at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway from 4 to 6 with our show. Then Donald back here with the Talk of Gas and Alley in just a little bit. And there you have it. So don't forget tomorrow morning, if you're going to be out at the track, get out here early at noon and watch the green flag be waved by Terry Stacy. Oh, my land.
Oh,
that's going to be exciting.
Bless her heart.
There you have it. We'll see everybody back here at 4 o'clock tomorrow. Good night, everyone.